Hi, it's Lucy, and welcome back to another episode of The Real Girls Club, my podcast where I interview the talented women working behind the scenes in the film industry. Today, I'm joined by the brilliant writer-director, Rosie Mae Bird-Smith, whose new short film, Egg Timer, has been making waves on the festival circuit, and even won the Outstanding Screenplay Shorts competition, standing out from over 1,500 scripts submitted. Egg Timer is a darkly funny and surreal exploration of the pressures of the biological clock. A mix of absurd comedy, bold visuals, and emotional truth that feels both hilarious and heartbreakingly real. In our chat, Rosie shares how the idea came about, what it was like crafting those striking in-camera effects, and how her background directing for brands like Andrex, Durex, Miller Lite, Ginsters, Asda, and Tilda has shaped her storytelling voice today. So sit back, grab your headphones, and let's dive into the world of Egg Timer with Rosie Mae Bird-Smith.
Thank you so much for joining me to talk to me today about your new short film. So yeah, I'm excited to just get started, really. So interesting to hear about your work and to have been reached out to and to hear about your film Egg Timer. But before we sort of dig into that, I'd love to talk about, you know, you and your background and how you sort of got started in the creative industries. I read that you primarily started more out in like advertising commercials. So you're not the first person I've interviewed that started out with doing ads and then has now sort of moved into film. So it's quite like an interesting transition. But yeah, so as far back as you can go and your first memories of being creative and interested in cinema, I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, sure. So I did English at uni and then I did a master's in creative advertising because I also used to be an artist. I was a portrait painter. And so I literally Googled like what career combines English and art. And then like the first thing that came up when I was at uni was
that match.
Creative advertising. And I was like, oh, well, that sounds fun. I like brands. And so I did a master's in Falmouth in creative advertising. And then you came out of it with like a portfolio of like billboards, scripts, radio adverts. And then I got a job as a creative. It's called a creative, which is just quite nice, really, isn't it? Yeah, and at an agency called Havas London. And so I worked there for about 6 years writing scripts for brands, primarily comedy scripts. I wrote like a few at the start, and then I think the people, like my creative directors, were like, oh, she's relatively funny. And so then I just ended up getting more of them. But then it got to a stage where I was like, oh, I don't want to do anything that's not a script, which was not really my job. So, and then it just became a bit niche. And when I'd send out, so what you do as a creative is you write the script gets approved after like a very long time, normally like half a year. And then you send it out to directors, like a bunch of, like three. So you bid it out to directors. So I had a lot of experience working with lots of different directors. And when you do that, you send the script. But what I would also do was send the script and like an 80-page document of like the types of lamps that I wanted and the carpet, and I just didn't really realize what I was doing was a treatment, and it took me like 4 years to realize that I should probably be doing another job, because then I'd get the treatments back and I'd be like, this isn't as good. And then they've just taken out my lamps. And so so that was it, really. And then I directed a short film in 2022, so not that long ago. And yeah, it was about COVID and conspiracy theorists. And I think just because of the time, it was quite timely. So It was like just as COVID had passed, so everybody was kind of ready to joke about it. Yeah, and it did very well, got a lot of traction. And and then I got signed. So
Well, that's amazing. I mean, such an interesting transition, and it is very different. I mean, similar yet different at the same time, because I suppose when you're working for brands, you're sort of doing what they want and sort of catering to their image that they want to have of their brand, obviously putting your mark on it in a way, but you are very much representing a brand. Whereas now that you're transitioning into filmmaking, you've got that freedom to express your point of view as opposed to a brand's point of view, probably. How did your background in advertising influence your own storytelling approach? Have you seen elements of what you've learned through advertising sort of trickle into what you're doing now?
Yeah, for sure. I think I was taught to write 30-second commercials, and so I had to land the joke in a very short time frame, which was, yeah, that's just how I learned to write. So breaking out of that was quite difficult, but also sometimes beneficial because you, like, I feel like often if you're just starting out as a writer without any sort of, without that background, you don't really know how to tie it up. Whereas I had the opposite problem where I was like, I don't know how to make this more flowery. Because it was just, yeah, I'd written 30 seconds for my whole life. So then expanding from that was actually quite tricky.
It's an interesting exercise to have, to be sort of almost timed like that sort of pressure. But at the same time, yeah, it probably does teach you how to do things more on demand, I guess. Rather than, as you say, maybe adding in too much detail, you kind of get to the point a lot quicker or on your better maybe with the timing of things maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And also it's hugely beneficial for experiencing every industry, every creative industry, because when you're a creative you work with the director, but you also go to the grade and you do the sound session and you basically do everything that a director would do. So I'd been exposed to every aspect of it before I made that transition, which was just amazing. Yeah, really.
I mean, an ad, you know, especially on screen, contains the very much the same things as a film would, you know, from music to dialogue to costume design, casting, yeah, everything basically. It's kind of the same, it's just different format, different length as well. And so many ads now that do feel like little short films anyway. If you can think about it, everyone gets excited for the John Lewis advert every year. I mean, I don't try to get excited, but you know, it's like a bit of an occasion to watch it. It is almost like some ads are like short films, and it's definitely a better way to get people engaged in them, I think, or engaged in the brand anyway. It's memorable. So you mentioned there that this is not, Egg Timer's not your first venture into short films. You made a film before that. Can you tell me about this first short film that you did?
Yeah, it was so it was in 2022.
About COVID, you said.
Yeah, called Herd Immunity. And it was about, well, at the time there was a lot of people not getting the vaccine and like the conspiracies around that. And so yeah, it was about a man who reads online that sheep wool gives you immunity, and so he basically goes and buys a herd of sheep and like takes them everywhere with him to avoid COVID or like a mysterious virus. Yeah, and then he dies.
Oh no.
And yeah, it was quite short. It was like 4 minutes and no dialogue. It was just like set to a yodel. And yeah, I loved it. I really loved it. It was like the first thing that I'd done. It didn't take any time. We got funding and then like I had to make it in like 2.5 weeks. So it was really quick turnaround.
Mm. And your work is often described as, you know, very much focused on the comedy aspect, you know, whether that was your advertisement for Mueller, or Asda. Yeah, you very much focus on the comedy side of things. So where do you think that comes from? And do you have any immediate sort of influences that come to mind that you saw when you were younger, growing up, whether that was a TV show or a film that made you fall in love with comedy as a way to tell stories?
Oh, that's tricky. No, not really. Like, I've never been like a hugely funny person. Like, I like to tell a good story, and I like when I recount a story, like often people sometimes laugh. But like, I'm not like, you know, yeah, I was never growing up, I wasn't like the class clown. So I think it didn't, yeah, it wasn't like a very natural evolution. But when I wrote, even when I wrote at primary school, I would always write, like I used to win like the little writing competitions, and they would always be like funny, weird stories. So yeah, but I don't really know where it came from, to be honest.
It's a natural ability maybe that comes to you, or it's a natural part of your personality without you realizing, maybe.
I think what I used to watch when I was little, My Parents Are Aliens, loved that.
Oh yeah, I was a fan of that as well.
And also like Grizzly Tales, I feel like that had quite an impact on me, loved that. Like such a weird animation and like really good like moralistic stories. Yeah, you know, I'm talking about like CITV programs, but but like they were good. Mona the Vampire, pretty decent.
Yeah, that was a great show. You're naming all my TV shows. Probably I'm 30, and yeah, we'll get onto that later, because I know Egg Timer is sort of based on a girl turning 30. So I'm assuming we're probably from, yeah, very similar generation. So yeah, I'd like to go on to talk about Egg Timer now, your most recent short film. So Egg Timer presents a really unique narrative with personified ovarian eggs.
Yeah.
Can you share the inspiration behind this concept, how it evolved into the sort of film's premise?
So it came from two things, really. The first thing was the fact that herd immunity to come out, and then I had weirdly lots of people being like, "Oh well, what else have you got like in your bank?" And I was like, "Well, I don't." So I felt like really pressurized to have something else, and so I was just like frantically googling, because the thing about coming from an advertising script background is that you always have a brief, so you always someone's always like, "Here's the problem, and we need the solution." And so I found it really difficult writing something like from nowhere. So either herd immunity, even that was like a writing brief online. So I did a similar thing. I was like frantically Googling like writing briefs, and I found one that was like, write something about an egg. And so for some reason, I just started writing about ovarian eggs, and then thought it was quite funny. And then I was like, also it'd be quite funny if they were real people and not the animations.
I have to agree, it was very funny. I enjoyed it. I love the idea of personifying something otherwise abstract anyway. So yeah, the film's protagonist, Megan, faces societal pressures as she celebrates her 30th birthday. And as I said in the email to colleague Hattie, I had just turned 30 in May, so it does feel very, very relevant anyway, apt for the timing of my life as well. So I'm wondering what personal or cultural observations influenced this storyline for you. I mean, you said you saw a brief about an egg online, but obviously you digged a bit deeper maybe into your own thoughts about that. And yeah, what were your inspirations?
Yes, at the time I wrote it, I was 27, so I was a lot. Oh, it was ages ago. It's been so weird. It's literally just gone on and on. So yeah, I was 27, and I don't know. I clearly didn't have any bigger problems than like worrying about than like worrying about kids. And I think, but now that I am actually 30, I'm entirely fine and I'm not so stressed out. But I think that it is a strange age. I think it's a strange age. And because all of a sudden, all of my friends have like hit this bracket, and like three of my best friends are pregnant. Like there's about 90 weddings a year. It's a lot. And I think if you're not in that headspace, or you don't have a partner, or you're not just 100% sure, then I think you can feel like the anomaly a bit. And yeah, and I think it's not a story about someone who doesn't want kids. It's not a story about like actively choosing not to. It's just about somebody who just isn't 100% sure. And I think there's a lot of a lot of the time I get a lot of people being like, "Oh well, when you know, you know." And it's like, what if you don't?
Yeah, I know. I know it's I'm sure, with you showing the film to other audiences, I'm sure you've been getting reactions from people that, they do resonate with it a lot, like I do myself. As you turn 30, it is this sort of, okay, should I be doing all these things because I am this age now? But there's, as you say, there's so many different ways to do life. And also, not just because you've, ticked over 30, does that suddenly mean, okay, now I need to have a kid? It's like, well, there's
No,
still actually
exactly.
quite a lot of time. My mum didn't have me till she was 37, I believe. And so yeah, it's not because you've hit 30, but I definitely
No.
got that, you definitely encapsulated that feeling of pressure, especially with all the people asking her questions at the party. It sort of actually reminded me a bit of Shiva Baby or Shiva Baby, if you've
I
seen
actually
that.
watched that afterwards, so I wrote it, and then someone sent that to me, and I was like, "Oh, yeah, it is. It's
Very
really."
similar, where she's like in this party and all the adults are like, "So what are you doing?" And it's just like, also it felt a bit like Peep Show as well, the sort of I guess with the point of view. So I'm wondering how you developed the film's visual style and what references or inspiration sort of guided the process of making Egg Timer.
I think inherently, like, I have quite a distinctive style in my work, which I don't know why, but people say I do, so that's always quite positive. It's normally quite moody. The lighting is always like, it's like a lot of shadow, a lot of contrast. I was like quite adamant that I didn't want it to like be set in a specific era. I like my work to be quite ambiguous, like when it's set. So yeah, I mean, a bit like Sex Education, like you can't really tell when it's set. It's a bit vintage, bit modern, and you don't really know like when it's supposed to be, and I really like that. So yeah, we did that. So there's intentionally some bits that are quite vintage, some of the music's quite vintagey, some of her clothes are, but there's also like a modern element, so you can't really, yeah, so like everybody can relate, and then also gives you a bit more freedom in terms of like set design. So yeah, inspiration, I don't know, to be honest. Yeah, visually, no, I kind of in the same vein as the rest of my stuff, and the same also the same vein as my previous short. which was like, if you compare the sets, they're pretty similar.
In terms of the casting as well, of the comedians for the roles of the Avarian Eggs, it adds a very distinct flavour to the film. How did you approach casting for these roles, and what sort of qualities were you looking for in the actors that were going to play these Avarian Eggs? And also the other people, not Megan, we'll talk about her after, but yeah, everyone else.
Yeah, so I work with, obviously every job I get, I have a casting agent. It varies from job to job, but the woman that did Herd Immunity was called Emma Garrett, and she also has done a few of my commercials, and so she did this one as well. I had casting briefs like in the original treatment, and then I had like vague ideas of like the types of people that I wanted. I write like very, very in-depth briefs where I'm like, this is the type of person, like this is where they live, this is what they wear. And so I did that for like everyone, even like all the family and all the extras, and yeah, and then we just got like a big selection back. Obviously Megan was the one that I was like very keen to make sure she wasn't too posh or too working class. She was just like very relatable, not like blonde and like very like stereotypically beautiful, but like has a very pretty face. And also like the woman that we cast, Ella Broccoleri, she's just brilliant. She's so interesting. Her face has got like so much intrigue, and she doesn't need to do much to say so much. And yeah, so that was her. And then for the female comedians, but like I said, we had like a vague idea, and then we just put feelers out to see who was interested, and luckily five very good ones were, which is very surprising because I don't think anyone would want to play an egg.
I mean, to be surprised, actors are up for anything, I'm sure.
Oh, true.
When it sounds fun and a little bit different, and they don't have to take themselves too seriously, I think they enjoy that, especially the comedy actors. You talk about writing briefs really in depth, and you also mentioned treatments earlier. I have heard of the word treatments, but can you dig into that a little bit more for maybe those who are less familiar with that, and how you go about writing your briefs? Like, do you write a whole background story, even though you're not going to explore, you know, the whole life of the character in the film you're doing anyway?
Yeah, so a treatment is, on a commercial, a treatment is like a 30-page document where you expand on the script you've been given. You do like a little introduction, like what the tone, or how you envision the tone, and you do pages on the type of people that you'd cast, what the set's going to look like, type of lighting, sound, what music, no music, basically everything, so that they can envision what your version of the film will be. Because when they send just the script to three people, and three people will interpret it in an entirely different way. So that's what that is. And yeah, and so everybody does different types of treatments, but in my treatments, I give the biggest background like you could ever give. So one of the main ones I can think of is I did a commercial for Ginster's Pasties. They'd written about a farmer, but it was like quite vague. Like the protagonist was a female farmer, and she was like very quirky. And so I did like 8 pages on her house, and like what her bedroom's like, and you know, the type of people that she has on her farm, and what she wears, what kind of car she drives, all those kind of things. So that then not only does that help you obviously hopefully win the job, but also then when it comes to actually doing it, your HODs already have all the information that they need to like go and get the right type of props, and they know the tone like from the start, so you don't need.
Exactly. You really let your imagination run wild then, because you could just think about a whole world in your head really that you want to envision afterwards. It sounds fun.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
So is that the case for Egg Time, where you kind of, yeah, imagined everything, every part of Megan and her background and what she would wear? Where did you dig for the inspiration? Is it very much just sitting down and writing and thinking about it, or is it digging, like picking bits out from your own life of things you like and that you are attracted to? Was the character at all based on yourself? I mean, you did say you were 27 when you did it, so not quite 30 yet, but were you bringing in elements of your own life?
A little bit, yeah, I think a little bit, but it's always weird, isn't it, because then you get family members being like, is this me? And I'm like, no.
Like, don't be offended.
And my mom's like, please tell me that's not me. I'm like, it's not you. But yeah, I think, where did I get that from? I do a lot of image research, so when it comes to like, yeah, especially wardrobe and everything, I'll do like pages and pages of references and stills from films. I do that a lot. That's really helpful just for tone and lighting.
So also with Megan's character, I wonder, how did you collaborate with her to bring her character to life? And what ways did you work with the cast and along with the other actors? Is there ways that you sort of psyched people up on set to like get them to bring their best Yeah, how do you collaborate with actors? Is it very much you just let them, you know, do their job, or are you very much like involved, and or do you like a bit of what's the word, improvisation?
Yeah, so I didn't think I would when I started out, but the first set I was ever on as a director, I just realized very quickly that that is kind of how I like to work. So yeah, with all the eggs, we did a few kind of chemistry meetings beforehand, and I told them that we'd have three cameras that were roaming, and so ideally we capture a lot of improv, and there's no better way to make your script funnier than like actual comedians just taking the general gist of it and making it better. So yeah, I always do a lot of improv. I always run the lines that we've got, and then I run lines that I've prepped that I think might sound more organic, and then I let them do their own thing, time dependent. So yeah, we did that for this, but it was a lot harder than any other job I've done, because it was so hard to, like, there was five of them, it was a very strange setup, and to like capture the improv of all of them at different times was, yeah, quite challenging. But yeah, they did a really good job of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm intrigued if it's something that you imagine in long form or in a TV show, as a long form concept, or into a TV show, or is it something you see as a standalone short film?
I mean, I don't see, yeah, I don't see that. I think it's just a short. I don't know how you'd expand it. I mean, I'm happy for some exec to try. I don't think it has that many legs. I also think it's quite nice to just do a short for the sake of a short.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like often people are always doing them as like proofs of concept, and that's great. And sometimes you just want to tell a short story.
Yeah, true, exactly. Sometimes it's fine as it is, and there's not much more to say, maybe. What sort of conversations or reactions have you encountered so far from audiences, you know, during its sort of festival circuit, and how do you hope it sort of contributes to the sort of discussion?
It's pretty new, so I haven't been to many yet. We've got Aesthetica and Bolton and Norwich coming up, so I'm going to try and go to those. But yeah, no, I haven't been in any of the rooms where it's been received, so I don't know. I just know like the reaction from my immediate group of people and like some of the execs, which is nice. I think especially, yeah, with women, it seems to have gone down quite well. So it's always good to get different opinions. Like when we were editing it, like we'd edit a certain scene in like three different ways, and then we'd get the runners to come in and be like, what's the best or what's the funniest and does this make sense? Because you can lose your perspective. So it's always good to get different range of opinions.
Yeah, definitely. Was there any moments of challenges or doubt throughout the making of the film, or maybe in your career in general, where you've had doubt, or you very much just go with it and you don't take it too seriously? You just think, well, if this doesn't work out, then I'll try something else. Or yeah, is there any?
Yeah, no, I found this really hard. I found it really difficult, because I've been very spoiled in the types of productions that I've been on in commercials, because they're huge budgets and nothing's like scrimped on. So I found it really difficult, this, because also Herd Immunity was a smaller cast, a slightly like bigger budget for the type of short we were doing. And this was spread across 3 days when realistically it probably should have been about 10. But yeah, I found it quite difficult. So the whole way through I was thinking, God, this is shit. but I was just doing it anyway because it had already been paid for. So I think I have quite a good like objective judgment on what I think is okay and what I think isn't working, which is quite good, because I think sometimes when it's your own work you can just be blinded by the fact that you've done it, and so you think that it's great. There's many parts in it that I think could have been better or didn't work or yeah didn't land, but I think that's just the nature of a short, because it's such tight budget, such tight timings, and yeah
as you say, you've maybe got less, well yeah, the budget's smaller and the time constraint is shorter maybe, so yeah, there's a bit more pressure on you there. But again, you said you're quite used to that in terms of working on certain briefs and things like that, but yeah, it does sound like a bit of a challenge, but each one a learning curve, I suppose.
Oh god, it was, yeah, definitely.
Are you working on anything right now to come, like are you still working in advertising, or are you working?
Yeah, so my agent is Biscuit Filmworks in the UK and in America. And so, yeah, I'm always doing commercials with them. And I'm not doing another short anytime soon.
Put you off for life. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, it has put me off for a while. But I think hopefully something a bit more long form. I've got like a TV outline thing. So we'll see where that goes.
I can definitely see your style fitting in on Netflix or something with a series.
Oh,
You know, you, after you mentioning Sex Education, it's very similar to your style.
yeah.
And I'd love to see something, you know, that you would do from a female perspective. Definitely, I'd love to see that. And your style would, yeah, fit in very well, I'm sure.
Oh, that's really nice.
And hopefully you'll have more, I don't know, a TV show is a whole other sort of area compared to ads or short films. So
Yeah, and I think
more to
like yeah, I think a lot of well, most directors tend to straddle all of the mediums just because it's so different. Like commercials are very quick to about turnarounds, and TV is obviously a longer stint. But yeah, I think it's good to kind of spread yourself across all of them.
Yeah, do you feel quite excited about the idea of approaching television? And have you got any ideas in mind already of, you know, without spoiling or sharing your secrets?
I've got one. I've had a very strange year this year, so I've got one about that. But yeah, I think it's also something to build your confidence up to. I don't know. I think some people feel very confident just like throwing themselves into any opportunity that comes their way, whereas I feel like I want to write it, see what happens with it, and then yeah, just take my time. I feel like for so many years I've
Yeah,
been like
baby
such a rush.
steps.
I was like, oh my God, panic, like must do this, and now I feel like I've hit a time where I'm like, okay, we don't have to rush this.
Yeah, you've got time, and as you say, you've done it probably in quite a good way where you've done advertising, tested out the waters with short films, and then you can gradually move into the other longer form content, whether that's a film or TV, you know, without it feeling like you're jumping right into the deep end, maybe.
I think it's always good to just take time. And yeah, I don't think yeah, I think when you're in a creative job, I feel like you're always like desperately like looking for the next thing or panicking that like your peers are doing better, which I obviously feel. But I think it's just good to take a step back and judge everybody on individual merit.
Yeah, of course, everyone's got their unique perspective. And I guess also you don't know when inspiration's going to strike. It could be anywhere, anytime. And rather than trying to like force a story out of yourself, like, oh, I must think of something, you know, you sort of wait for it to happen. Maybe a life event that happens that sort of propels it, maybe. I'm wondering for other sort of aspiring filmmakers and creatives, especially women, what kind of advice you would offer based on your own experiences in the industry so far?
I'd say everybody says this, but I would say just try and make something. I think often people think when people say that, they mean like just grab a camera and go outside and do it yourself. That's not how I work. And so when people said that to me when I was like trying to do this, I felt like quite daunted by it because I feel like there's two types of directors. There's like the type of director that, you know, had a handheld camera when they were nine and like always filmed stuff and is very experimental, and that's great. But then I think that can also put off the other type of director, which is like story-based writer directors, who don't necessarily want to shoot it on a phone and do it themselves. And that's the type of camp that I sat in. So I'd say don't be put off by that and try and put a team together because, yeah, I'm not the type of director that knows loads about lenses or, you know, edits it themselves. And so, yeah, don't be put off by that because that's what everybody else is for. So if you
Yeah.
can like assemble a team of people around you that are better than you in that field, which is what you're supposed to be doing anyway, then I think you're onto a winner. And you can do that just by reaching out to people. Like you can just reach out. Like the first short I did, I reached out to a really good cinematographer and I was like, I really like your work. I do like this. Can you make it? And I just did that.
Yeah,
But
straight to
like
the point. Yeah.
every part of the like all the HODs, the editor, the production designers. And yeah, and then they just resonated with the story. So then we had a brilliant team. But you can't do it on your own. I mean, you can. Some people do, but some people don't, and don't be put off by that is what I'd say.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, as you say, not necessarily even just two camps, but there's several different camps
Yeah.
of types of directors and how they work, and everyone has their own approach. Not to think, oh, I should do it like them because they're doing it like that. Well, it's like, well, if it works one way for you and it might work one way for another person,
Yeah.
kind of thing. Or they approach it from a different angle, like you're more storytelling focused, whereas, as you say, other people are more experimental, focused on the technology side of things, maybe, and how they like to film it. And I guess you'll also pick up those things along the way anyway. As you've worked on all these ads, I'm sure you've seen all the big fancy cameras and
Yeah.
lights and the thing that they use, and maybe gradually you get less intimidated by it if you were in the beginning, and yeah, you sort of know what you want to use. But personally, I see some of the cameras or whatever that they have on films, and I'm like, oh my God, all the
I know,
buttons.
yeah, I know. But someone said to me once, and it was actually really beneficial. They were like, it's not your job to like know about, to be like as technical as the cameraman. It's not your job to be as, have as brilliant an eye as the production designer. Your job is to bring it all together and have a brilliant relationship with the actors and make sure that the story lands. For me, that's how I view my job. But every, like I say, every director is different. But I'd say don't get hung up on the technicalities.
I think some people like to get very involved and know a lot, but I think that could probably take you away from your job. And as you say, that's what they're there for. The cameraman is there to be the
Yeah.
cameraman. So, you know, you just need to tell him what you want it to look like, and then he'll do the technical side of things. So, and what kind of way do you approach actors and working with your team members on set? Are you quite assertive, or are you quite open to letting them giving their opinion? I mean, how do you, what I'm really asking is, like, how do you impose yourself in a way that you can be confident and heard and understood? And because I think it's, you know, you're leading people, so it's quite, you know, you're the boss kind of thing.
Yeah.
So how are you, like, how do you feel confident in that
I
role?
think it's important to let people do their thing. And I think if you've hired people that you trust, then there's no reason they shouldn't be doing that anyway. So I've never actually been in a position where I've had to be like, I hate this. Or no. But if I've been in positions where like my cinematographer will be like, actually, it's better like this. And then I'll say, yeah, or actually, well, I don't think so. Can we, do you mind putting it back? And that's okay. Like that's, I feel like that's just, yeah, that's just your role. But yeah, like I said, if you've hired, you know, a cinematographer that you think is the absolute shit, and you've hired set designers that I couldn't do that job. So I'm hiring people that are way better than me at that. So yeah, I don't often come into situations where I have to be like, I hate what you're doing. Edit's probably quite tricky.
Luckily, it's quite hard to say that. But you know, it's probably a constant sort of dialogue of, you know, compromising in a way, like you don't want to compromise on their vision, but not on yours either. Sort of stepping on their toes. Like, yeah, you want to find a good balance probably of letting them do their thing, but having your vision. So.
And I think the edit's always the bit where it's tricky because everybody sees that differently. So even when you've done your edit and then either execs or creatives come in and then they try and tweak it or make it, yeah, their version of what they saw, because everyone sees things differently. So then it's just a conversation where you're like, this is funnier. And then you get to be like, hey, back me up.
What I meant, I think, by the word assertive earlier is that you've kind of not, you can't let yourself be like a pushover. Like, you need to be very like strong in your vision. Otherwise, you could very easily sway for everyone that's saying like, oh, this or this, and then you'd be like completely lost. Like, you'd be just going, you know, like if you're a people pleaser, it's not the best job to have. Like, oh no, I want to, you know, make them happy. Well, no.
No, I think, yeah, you just need to be very sure about how you see it. And bring everybody on that journey with you.
Definitely. I'm wondering what's a film that you believe everyone should at least watch once. Actually, usually at the end of my episode, I like to ask people their five favorite films. If you're able to give me five, then you
Sure.
can. If you can only give me one or two or three, then
Okay.
not necessarily that inspired Egg Timer or your own work, but I mean, yeah, maybe ones that have inspired your own vision and style and your love for cinema.
Oh God. Okay. Finding Nemo is like my
Oh,
favorite film, basically, of all.
yes, great
It's
choice.
hilarious. Basically, all my favorite films are kids' films. I think Finding Nemo is a brilliant film.
Agree, I
Beauty
agree.
is
Beautiful
fantastic.
animation.
Yeah, it's such a good story. It's funny. It's got everything in it that you could ever want, I think. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, big fan.
Great, that's a
Stardust.
great comedy as well.
I love Stardust.
Sorry, I'm speaking over you. Say it again.
Stardust.
Oh, okay.
Brilliant film. Robert De Niro's best performance, I would argue.
I know it. I was getting it mixed up with Finding Neverland. Don't know why, but Stardust.
It's such a good film. It's like so underrated. Like, It's just so good. Yeah. And he's like a gay pirate and it's just like fantastic.
I think the only thing I remember about it was Take That, that did the like the theme tune or the soundtrack for it or something.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know that.
I feel like they did. I don't know. I have to double check that after this. But yeah, I remember seeing Stardust, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah, I love that film. What else do I like? Big Fish. Like Big Fish.
Great film.
Yeah, what's that? That's four, right?
So you did Finding Nemo, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Stardust,
Big Fish. Oh, I've got
Big
one
Fish,
more.
one more.
I love the new Matilda. It's not a kid's film. I love the new Matilda. The new Matilda is fantastic.
Oh, I haven't seen it. Is that on Netflix?
Yeah, I think so. Emma Thompson's Trunchbull, and she's just absolutely brilliant. Like, just fantastic. And it's obviously like all Tim Minchin's songs, and it's such a brilliant film. Paddington.
You know what? I was literally thinking that. I was like, I'm too
fantastic.
I was like, I can. Based on your five films, I was like, I can totally see what your style is. I bet she's going to say Paddington next.
Paddington 2
there
is
you
like,
go.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't say that first. Paddington 2 is a brilliant film. Like, just a flawless film. Again, like, I feel like all the, like, Hugh Grant in that film, like, that's definitely the best thing he's ever done. And, like, yeah, it's like Emma Thompson in Trunchbull. They just, because they're kids' films, they don't get, like, noticed, but they're just fantastic.
I hope for you one day that you get to direct a film with Emma Thompson and Hugh Grant in it. That would be amazing.
Yeah, that
they're
would
like the cream of the cream of like British comedy. I mean, there's probably even better ones than that. I'm probably like missing out quite important people, but you know, the most prominent of my time.
Yeah, yeah. So there's my oh, that was six, and like five of them were children's films. So there we go.
Do you think you'd ever? I don't know if I asked this already, but do you think you'd ever want to go into filming like a kids film or a kids TV show?
Yeah, no, I'd love to do like, I think my dream is like a musical. Like, I'd love to do a musical, dark comedy musical, like 10 out of 10. That's why Matilda, yeah.
Dark comedy musical, interesting.
Or just, yeah, something like that. But I do love a musical, especially like a, yeah, like the new Matilda is brilliant. It's based on the stage show and Tim Minchin wrote all the music.
Okay. I mean, I love the original. It's like one of my favourite films, so I'll probably like this one too.
Yeah, the original is fantastic. But what's really good about it is they haven't tried to, it's not like a remake, it's just, it's very, very different, and it's got songs, and it's, yeah. Have you seen the stage show?
No, I haven't, sadly. I mean, I think maybe part of me is like, sometimes I'm a bit reluctant with like remakes, because if I love the original so much, I don't want it to like ruin that vision I have of it, or... But then I know it's its own thing, you know, so it's separate from that. But no, I haven't had a chance to see many musicals. But
no, that's what's so good about it, is that they're so separate. They're like, I feel like most filmmakers would like scorn me.
Not at all. You'd be surprised. I think if you watched the Letterboxd four favourites, they do four favourites. I do five, so it's not too similar. And sometimes directors come out with films and I'm like, really? Like, that's their favourite film? I was surprised, you know. But, you know, it's whatever your taste and style is. There's no right or wrong, I don't think. Obviously, there are some films that are bad, but you can still enjoy a good kids' film.
I love a feel-good film.
Exactly. You want to feel good after a film most of the time. Do you have any female directors that you admire and that you kind of emulate, inspired by, and you like what they do? Or male directors? Could be.
I just watched Sorry Baby by Eva Victor.
Yes.
And that's fantastic. Like, really, really good. And I knew I was going to like it from the poster.
The cat.
And I love the trailer. And I think the script's brilliant and the edit's brilliant. And I think she's done a really good job. So that was very good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that as well. I saw that a month ago now, maybe or so. And I love how she infused comedy into such a sort of otherwise sad story. If there was no comedy in it, it would have been pretty dark. But I like that she brought in those humorous elements, so I can see why you liked it, because it did have the comedy side to it as well, and the lovely little cat.
Yes, very good. Yes, I like Taika Waititi's like early work. That's great. Yeah, no, I don't, there's no one specific. I just think take inspiration from everybody.
Yeah, from whatever you see, maybe from music as well, and fashion, and reading books as well, and other areas. And the last question I'd quite like to ask, so I could sort of round up the hour, what other sort of things do you do to stay inspired outside of film? Do you have like creative rituals? Like, I've spoke to previous guests and they like to do morning pages or Pilates or journaling. Yeah, is there anything you do Like when you're having a creative writer's block, do you like do something to get out of that?
Oh, that's a hard one.
Or maybe you don't have
I just
any
don't
literally.
write. I don't know. Shower, walk. I think a walk.
Yeah, some people get their best ideas in the shower.
Yeah, the shower. I read something online about that actually. It's about like the flow of water or something, and that's why actually, even though you can't have had any ideas at your desk, all of a sudden they come to you in the shower because it's like, yeah, it's very interesting. Oh, yeah, I
Like
read
to
about
hear
it.
that.
Really fascinating. No, but that's, yeah, I don't know. I always write things down. Like, I've got like notes on my phone, and anytime something relatively interesting happens or entertaining, it goes straight in the document, especially like something someone said. So anyone I hang out with needs to be very careful because it always goes straight.
You're recording
Goes
everything.
straight in there.
You're going in my script.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I don't have rituals per se.
That reminds
But,
me of Fleabag when like he says something or she something and says something and he's like, she says, oh, you've got to write that down, it's so good, kind of thing. And then he starts writing it down,
yeah,
like
I do
mid
that all the time.
conversation.
I'm like, sorry, I'm gonna write that down.
It's true though, like if you don't do it straight away, you might forget it. And then, like, you know, some people say when they get their ideas in the middle of the night or before they're falling off to sleep, it's good to have a notepad by your bed. I mean, personally, I'm too tired to bother to write something down. But yeah, I mean, notes on a phone is a lot easier. And then you'll look at it the next day and think, what the hell was on about?
Yeah, I know. Half the time it's like four oranges, and I'm like, what was that?
My shopping list.
Yeah. Absolutely no idea. But yeah, that is always.
And is there anything else you'd like to say about Egg Timer for people that get a chance to go and see it and how you would say, go and see it? Like, do it. The three, what is it called? An elevator pitch for Egg Timer.
I just hope that everybody enjoys Egg Timer. It was a very fun and long process, so if people go and watch it, that would be helpful. And yeah, I think this is really bad. Should I start again?
That's fine, just go and see it and I hope they enjoy it.
Yeah, okay. I hope everybody enjoys Egg Timer. It was a labour of love and it took a very long time, so please go. It's screening at many festivals, and so keep an eye out, and yeah, you can follow the Instagram page for all of the updates.
Ah, that's great. Yes, actually a good thing to say that, so people can go and find out when and where they could potentially go and see it. And will there be Q&As involved with the short?
I think as a few, yeah, we did one the other day. Some of them are online, yeah, but I think there are a few. I think we're doing one at Aesthetica, so yeah,
I'll add them into the show notes for people to. Anyway, thank you so much, Rosie.
Oh,
it's been lovely speaking with you about your film, and it's been so nice to watch it, and I was glad, I'm glad it was brought to my attention, and I look forward to seeing what you do next, whether that's a TV show or a film or an ad, maybe the next John Lewis ad, who knows.
Maybe.
That'll be good.
That would be good.
More likely next year, though. I'm sure you would know by now if you were going to do it.
I would. Yeah. I would. I think I've already shot it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Well, in advance. Okay, well, thank you so much. And yeah, love speaking with you.
Thanks. See you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Real Girls Club, and a big thank you to Rosie Mae Bird-Smith for joining me and giving us such an honest look into the making of Egg Timer, from the writing process to the wild visuals and everything in between. If you enjoyed this conversation, please follow the podcast so you don't miss upcoming episodes. It really helps the show if you can leave a rating or a review and share the episode with anyone who loves film or is working in the industry. You can find all the links to Rosie's work, her commercials and where to watch Egg Timer in the show notes, so definitely check those out. Thanks again for tuning in and supporting the podcast. I'll be back very soon with another episode and another behind the scenes look at the woman shaping the film world. I'll see you in the next one.